Hello, my name is Buzzy Donahue, and I'm here today with Doreen Hind, who is featured in the movie The Great Balance. The Great Balance is a Canadian film directed by François La Liberté. The Great Balance will be shown Sunday at Women in Film, April 12th to the 14th, starring Sophia Delza, the Grand Master of Tai Chi Chuan style in America. Doreen Hind, a longtime student of Delza, continues teaching this ancient art. Miss Hind plans to attend and demonstrate her artistry. Welcome, Doreen.
Thank you, Bessie. Great to meet you.
I think part of what makes this movie so interesting is the fact that you're in it. And so I would like for you to tell me, how did this journey begin? How did you get interested in Tai Chi Chuan?
Oh, in a land far away, a very long time ago, someone put a newspaper in my hand and said, here, read this. I read it. It was about Sophia Delza, away across the water in America. And I was so excited about it that I found a way to get in touch with her and say, if I can get myself to America, can I be your student? And that's how it all began.
Did you have any idea that that newspaper article would change your life in a way?
It has changed my life enormously and confronted with me with challenges. I'm a country girl, very shy, not much exposure to a wider collection of people, but I always had interest in other people. I spent 16 years with Sophia Delza when I met her, and she took me as a student and shared very much more than just the training in Tai Chi Chuan.
I realized as I was watching this movie that I really don't know a lot about Tai Chi Chuan. Could you explain it to me?
Well, the thing that's a wonder about it, this has been around for thousands of years. If you read any of the available Chinese history, there's something intriguing to an individual when you come across something that you like. You just go to an introductory class. It's very appealing. I mean, you're not standing up there just waving your arms around and lifting your legs like maybe it feels good. You learn a form, an outward form here. But all the time over the years you are training, it would take you about 1 year to learn the whole 108 movements, but learn them well and be able to do them without having to stop and ask about it. It's so delightful because it's like your second mother or father or second informer about life. Doing that exactly the way an educated teacher teaches you, you learn how to move with your body correctly, more correctly than we do.
Is this something that one would get up in the morning and do?
Oh, yes.
And how long would it take to do those poses?
Oh, to do that whole 108 would be about 20 minutes. But I very often stop and cooking in the middle of cooking breakfast and just do this little part of it.
I saw that in the movie, and I thought that was charming how you use the movements in your everyday life.
Yes, yes.
And I think it's so important because as we get older, it becomes even more evident we need to keep moving.
I think that's very true, but I never felt that. I've always been very agile. I was ballroom dancer in my life for all my growing up years, and always moving, swimming, dancing.
Were you just practicing the art of Tai Chi Chuan for 16 years, or were you teaching at that time too?
No, I came into the teaching only when my teacher gave me permission and she introduced me to where she wanted me to teach. So my first teaching place was the State University in New York. The second place I taught was in Carnegie Hall, the very first beginning class, which is just like beginning movement. And then the third place I taught was at the United Nations.
Can you talk a little bit more about teaching at the United Nations?
Oh, yes. It's been an extraordinary acceptance, amazing people there, because just after my moving to the West Coast here, and the United Nations people were looking through their old records in one of their offices and found my name and Sophia Delza's first. She started a school there, which they were very pleased about. So she introduced me there, and I taught there then for a lot of years. But they got in touch with me here just a year ago and said that they'd read about me, and they wanted me to go there because they wanted to honor me for being an older woman and daring to share my truths with others, yet always keeping room for a connection with the other one.
You must have been just so surprised and pleased.
Oh, for such an innocent young girl, you know, it was a giant leap into the never-never, really, because it was movement, and it was something you could begin and stay with for a long time and learn it really well. It felt like a wonderful place to stand. But the thing that appealed and comes forth when you practice and train in Tai Chi Chuan for a long time probably takes 4 or 5 years before this begins to arise in you, that there's something knowing you're learning as well as putting your foot there precisely where it has to go. So you begin to see how it affects your straight body. No curved back at 80 or 90 or whatever. It's teaching you by how all of the units of your body, the systems of your body work. Then if you have a little kink or hurt or something, just the moving of the Tai Chi Chuan will eliminate that. You've only got to read about what the Chinese have said about it. But the thing is, you have to get the teacher who has been willing to stay and learn all of that, which Sophia Dalza did. The training of the Tai Chi Chuan goes very deeply into the human body. It speaks to you, especially if you're a very interested student and you're not interested in just doing aerobics or something. You know, you begin to read about this Tai Chi Chuan, learn about it from your teacher. It has an efficacy about it that you feel in the inner parts of you, correcting it.
Also, I don't think there were too many Tai Chi Chuan female teachers. Mm-hmm. At that time, mm-hmm. So she started mm-hmm. a wave with that, too. Mm-hmm.
She went, this was in the late 40s, 48, something like that, before they had the last revolution, really. Her husband had gone there from either UNESCO or the United Nations to resettle people coming across Siberia, down through Manchuria, into China. And so she applied to go too with him and teach modern dance. So she did that. But she came from an interesting Russian family, and they came in the very early years. The mother was a midwife, and they had 11 children. All those children all went on to be public people, working, helping in their society. And that, I think, for her was a big thing.
Tell me, how did this movie come about?
Oh, from Francois and Jocelyn, very good friends of mine. And they came to me because we were living on a small island in Canada. And they came to my class and liked the Tai Chi Chuan. My Tai Chi Chuan is for health. It is not for fighting. The Chinese person who designed it for good health in people. Certainly has been true for me and everyone who comes to my class. And the first moment in the class, they'll say, oh, this is too slow, I can't stand it. But then at the end of the class, everyone is walking out the door and saying, wow, I feel so calm.
Do you mind if I ask how old you are, Doreen?
93. Doesn't feel like that at all. My spirit will be young forever. Because, you know, I put that down to, it was war years, and we children in Australia had all had to leave school at 14, and we were all very sad about that, having no education or very little. The intuitive began to take hold and develop, and I was curious about life. My grandparents, my Irish grandmother was for me, and grandfather and mother, amazing human beings.
So when you were in New York, would you spend hours taking classes? Did you go every day? What would be the routine?
Came for a class once a week, an hour class, private class. So I just did that through all the years and learned. And then my daughters and I moved down to New York City. And I then would go to classes more often. I would join in with advanced classes, beginning classes. I'd still go on having my own private class. So she fitted me in wherever I had time to come. And then she involved me in her Chinese community too. She took me to Chinese plays and Chinese tumblers, all kinds of extra things that came from China.
Have you ever been to China?
No, but I'm expecting to go.
Tell me about that.
The extraordinary people at the UN have been so amazed at somebody, 93-year-old, teaching Tai Chi Chuan, because it is quite athletic and there are some very fast moves in it. But they decided they were going home on home leave, some of the men that worked there, and they wanted to take me and introduce me to the home of Tai Chi Chuan. When you get along to my age, you let ego go. It doesn't work for you at all. I'm a very humble person and grateful to be so, because I don't know. I'm interested in people. I feel I want to acknowledge everyone I meet because there is something there for us to see.
That's a good reminder for all of us.
Thank you.
Do you have anything that you feel that you'd like to tell us about?
Francois Laliberté and Jocelyn Nicouac. They're both lovely, lovely people. They've made some very lovely, beautiful films. When they saw the Tai Chi Chuan and they were doing it, they wanted to learn it because he's changed from just being a photographer on films. He has become his own filmmaker now.
You're living here in Port Townsend. Are you teaching any classes?
I'm getting ready to start classes here, and I'm very excited about it because the first class I'm going to teach is for a doctor, a medical doctor. You know, when I first came back from Canada, I said to her, I'd like to teach some of your patients. And she said, I've got a lot of people from different wards who have come back and have not really gone ahead with good health. And I know they can do it with me, with Tai Chi Chuan. I am a good teacher. And I love every one of my students that come who are open to learning. But everyone, you know, an adult, when you retire and then you're going to start something new, I'm supposing it's not that easy.
That's true. But it can be fantastic. I mean, you can have like a new life.
I think that's true. Most all of the people that I taught when I lived for 16 years in Canada now have just come from that. I taught at a college there. My class was the top book class every 6-10 weeks.
Well, that's so exciting because I'm sure there are going to be people here in Port Townsend that after they see this movie are going to be interested in meeting you and taking some of your classes. We're so lucky to have you be part of our community.
I'm loving it here. I think the people walk along the street and say hello and smile. And what a lovely environment it is to be.
We have more creative people here per square inch, I do believe. And it's so nice to be part of community. And I'm very happy that you are now part of our community.
I'm looking forward. The really interesting thing is I can teach 5 classes in a day and not be weary. It does not make you weary because you're learning how to breathe with every movement, a deep breath. I can center myself. I'm all over the place with excitement about everything to do, you know. But I'm always in a split second if I've gone overboard. I can be calm. I love that because when emergency's there, you need to be the one who can be the calm one, right?
Absolutely. Mm. Doreen Hine, I am so grateful that I had a chance to talk to you today about this fascinating subject.
Thank you so much. I have an ability or impulse is the right word. Thank you. Impulse to be excited because I am excited about life. Just all of it. Challenges or not, because gifts are there if you go through the challenge.
Wise.
Thank you to both of you, Taylor and Buzzy. Thank you so much. You've made it so easy for me to be here.
The movie's called The Great Balance. It's going to be here at Port Townsend at the Women's Film Festival, April 12th to the 14th.
Singing for our lives. Film director Jim Brown anchors himself in the beautiful Hudson Valley in New York, and his production company is headquartered in New York City. He's produced and directed multiple projects for film and television, and he's responsible for some of the most popular and critically acclaimed musical documentary programs of the last four decades. And Jim has produced and directed over 100 television documentaries and concerts. He's done at least four feature documentaries that received theatrical distribution, and he and his team have taken home four Emmys, most recently for Pete Seeger, The Power of Song. Port Townsend Film Festival's Women in Film series is so happy to include Jim's latest documentary, Holly Near, Singing for Our Lives, which will be screening as part of Port Townsend Film Festival's Women in Film on Saturday, April 13th at the Wheeler Theater, Fort Worden at 7 p.m. Jim Brown, welcome to KPTZ and welcome to Port Townsend in spirit.
Well, it's nice to be involved, and I wish I was there in person. I love that area of the country. It's very dear to my heart.
Jim, when I look at the body of your work, it seems to me that you were aptly suited to do a film on Holly Near. It's a woman who seems to be very comfortable in her own skin as life happens to her. And to so many periods of social change and awakening, I see a pattern in your choices of projects. But what was the salient thing that made you want to pursue Holly Near's story?
Well, she's been a friend for a long time, and Holly's got a great, unique story. And I think that the women's movement, particularly the feminist lesbian movement of the 70s, really never got the coverage that it deserved. They did groundbreaking things and caused changes in the way women are perceived, treated. There's been laws that have been changed. There's lots of women's centers with everything from health care to violence against women. And basically that she was kind of the Pete Seeger of the women's movement of that period. And we've known each other since about 1979 or 80. I was lucky enough to be holding a camera when she first sang with Ronnie Gilbert, which was part of the Weavers Wasn't That a Time. And the Weavers included Pete Seeger and Ronnie Gilbert and Fred Hellerman and my dear old friend Lee Hayes. Ronnie had a strong feminine voice and spoke out. And Holly grew up listening to the Weavers records, among other artists that are outlined in the film. And she dedicated an album to Ronnie. And Ronnie didn't really know who she was and ended up listening to the album, I think, while she was vacuuming her house or something. And it changed her whole way of thinking about women and got her involved in the women's movement. And she sought Holly out. Then when the Weavers did their concert at Carnegie Hall, the last concert that they performed together there, Ronnie insisted that they perform a couple of songs of Holly's, and they did. So when Holly and Ronnie were singing Ayuna Mujer, it was the first time they had sung together. And like the whole film crew was just had goosebumps. It was an incredible blending of voices. And you could see the delight on their faces as they sang. And it was just this magical moment. When our film got reviewed, it was often cited in the reviews that, you know, one of the best scenes was Holly and Ronnie singing together. And it was. So they began to tour shortly after the release of the film and went on touring for a couple decades.
Yeah, there's sort of a thread that runs through the film. Pivotal moments, not only meeting Ronnie Gilbert and bridging decades, but all of the pivotal moments that happened that sort of changed Holly's life. Carrying everything along with the song, and such a good songwriter and such a good reflection of the times with her lyrics.
She had a very interesting life. She was raised on a small cattle farm up near Ukiah. Didn't have a lot of neighbors around, so her sisters and her brother acted out plays. Her parents loved music. They were progressive. So in came the records of the Weavers or Pete Seeger or Odetta, different people of the time, Harry Belafonte, when she was a young child. And also, she was born with a marvelous voice. As luck would have it, Johnny Mathis's vocal coach, her husband got relocated and moved to that area, and she began to teach Holly piano and voice and also push her forward. She knew that she had an unusual talent. So Holly sang and made records, small records, when she was in high school. She went to study theater and actually dropped out because she was getting so many parts in Hollywood television shows, movies. And she met Jane Fonda, and Holly was already caught up in the peace movement. Jane Fonda needed people for Free the Army, the tour that toured the Army bases during the Vietnam War. And when she heard Holly, she recruited her on the spot. Holly toured around, first with Jane, and then following that, there was an Indochina tour with Tom Hayden and Jane. And she saw them as organizers, what they were doing. And around that same time, women were beginning to hold concerts for other women. At first, kind of in closeted, you know, bookstores and co-ops and even house parties. They weren't large public concerts. But Holly got together with three of the other popular singers of women's songs, Margie Adams, Chris Williamson, and Meg Christian. And Holly fell in with them. That tour, Women on Wheels, was the first big set of concerts to draw like thousands of women, women only often, to concerts to hear songs about women. And she became involved in that right after. She also was, I think because of her political organizing abilities, her concerts were like workshops. And she linked the women's movement to other political movements, including the peace movement. And she was very strongly involved in looking at what was happening in Central America and South America, especially the activities of the United States that were trying to squash Marxist governments. And she became involved with that movement as well, and the environmental movement, and on and on.
There were a lot of things that changed her, but from what I saw in the film, one of the pivotal, here we are, pivotal again, but one of the moments was Kent State. I think that sort of changed her whole orientation towards using her talents towards organizing and activism.
She met one of the victims that was shot, that survived, and he asked her to write a song. And she wrote, "It Could Have Been Me." It basically reflected the sentiments that anybody that had been involved in protesting could have been shot at that movement. It caught on. So her songs kind of capture moments in time. Probably the most famous song that she wrote was Singing for Our Lives. She had just learned that Harvey Milk had been assassinated and was actually rushing to the memorial that was happening, huge candlelight vigil in San Francisco. And on the way there, she wrote Singing for Our Lives, which became, I would say, an anthem of the LGBTQ movement.
The other part that really struck me was the odyssey of Redwood Records. One of the reasons why Redwood Records existed was to be able to produce and distribute songs that were geared for the women's movement.
Yeah, she started Redwood Records, actually, I think, a little before, maybe months before she really got involved with the women's movement. And I think she had auditioned for a lot of record companies, and they were all trying to mold her into something that they wanted. She didn't want that. And basically, she thought that she could sell records as she went around the country at her concerts. And her parents actually helped form Redwood Records. It grew into a politically inclined label that certainly embraced the women's movement, but other movements as well. And it went on for, I think, nearly 20 years and sold a fair amount of records. There were other women's labels. Hers became one of the biggest. I think she released almost 30 records of her own.
Her odyssey later on in her life was such a, it was so interesting to me because on the one hand, you know, her first lover was Meg Christian. And then, but when she approached feminism, she did it really, as she said, through a global door, as she says in the film, and with her travels. She became a symbol of coming out, but also a symbol of intimate connections and songs about them. Then she met a guy. You know, then she met Pat Hunt. And it was interesting to see how she stayed within her own skin. And one of my favorite quotes, she says, "Well, to the best of my knowledge, I'm monogamous." So it just goes to show how universal her songs are. I can kind of give you a personal example of that. Holly and I had a mutual friend, John Fromer, in San Francisco.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
And when John passed, there was a wonderful, wonderful celebration of John Fromer at the UU Church in San Francisco. And Holly was there and she sang. And the song that she picked to sing was one that is so universal, whatever one's orientation might happen to be. And I just love the lyric. I like the way you look in your baggy jeans. I like the way I like the way you walk with your sexy stride. I like the way you sound when you call out my name, the way you laugh when you got something to hide. But most of all, I like how you trust and change. And honey, darling, wonderful and true, may I say, peace becomes you.
And that was a wonderful album. That's how this project heated up. She had been touring around with a fairly large group, but, you know, I think there were 7 musicians touring with her. And they were just about to come off tour, and Donna Coronis, her manager at the time and the executive producer on this film, called me and said, "Can we grab this, like, right away? Can we film it?" And I said, "Yeah, I'm in." We rushed out to Berkeley. She was having a kind of a homecoming concert at the Freight, and it was marvelous, and she did all the songs off that album and all of her hits. It was a great standing room only event, and that's really how this project started. And then Donna and I began to talk and said, you know, her life has got such a great story to it. We ought to do more than just a concert, and we did.
It's a woven tapestry that I suggest that everyone come and see at Women in Film, which is presented by the Port Townsend Film Festival, of course. And you can see Holly Near singing For Our Lives, which will be screening as part of Port Townsend Film Festival's Women in Film on Saturday, April 13th at the Wheeler Theater at Fort Worden at 7 p.m.
You know, she's an American treasure. She probably could have been a Broadway star, a Hollywood star. She has the voice, she has the talent, she has the looks. And what's special about Holly is she chose to use those talents to push the world forward and get people involved in activism. And she's done that, and I think she sacrificed some things in doing that. But she's led a remarkable life and been at the forefront of some very important movements. I think she's got a great story. She's a great entertainer, and she's an American master.
And as Jane Fonda said towards the end of the movie, she is what you see.
She's the real deal.
May I say, peace becomes you. Yeah, yeah. May I say, peace becomes you. May I say, peace becomes you.
Women in Film, presented by the Port Townsend Film Festival, runs Friday through Sunday, April 12th through 14th. Passes are available at ptfilmfest.com. ptfilmfest.com.